Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, December 3rd. I'm Ray Graff. If you're looking to make some improvements around the house, maybe repair something that's been bugging you or your wife for a long time, well, this is it. Darren Tracy's here. Darren's a licensed professional engineer and construction specialist. He's ready to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, property management, plumbing. He joins us to offer his expertise every so often. It's usually a popular show, so call early, 800-348-2551. And yes, we'll play another edition of Name That Tool, 800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. Darren Tracy, your home improvement calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Time to talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement with Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. He is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction firm, and he is a director of the Capital District chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. You got a question? This guy's pretty smart. He might be able to help you. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 if you have a home maintenance or repair question. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, how are you, buddy?
Doing great, Ray. Thank you.
You know, we've talked about this once on the show, and I don't know, way back. And you have a box that says bone. I don't believe I've ever seen what's in the box. And we might as well start with this because it's weird, man.
Okay. Well, I was thinking about what to bring for a tool show and tell, and I'm running out of tools.
Really?
I may have to go buy some more. My wife is not going to want to hear that.
Yeah, I think that's not a good idea. Yeah.
So anyways, I came across this bone that we found on one of our construction projects. We found it buried in the wall while we're tearing off an addition, believe it or not. I mean, it was kind of a shocking thing to find in the wall. And I brought this because of the Ken Burns show Revolutionary War that recently aired on public TV, because this came from a Revolutionary War field hospital.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, so. Now, you know, can you say generally where it was?
Yeah, it was in Saratoga County near Schuylerville, near the Hudson River. In fact, the property was referenced in a historical Saratoga County book that this was a Revolutionary War field hospital, that particular property.
So you were renovating, and this was in a wall. Let me see this again.
Yeah. Here we go.
I don't want to touch it. Let's see.
So when we found this, we called the state police and turned it over to them.
Just in case it wasn't Jimmy
Hoffa
or something.
Well, they just didn't know what to do. And they had representatives from Saratoga Battlefield come over and take a look at the building. It was kind of interesting assessment of the building, because what I thought was the oldest part of the building, the field hospital, was actually the newest part.
Ah.
This little small addition that we're going to tear down off the rear. It's about 12 by 12. We're just going to tear it down. This guy looked at it closely. I said, no, this is the field hospital. This
amazing
old shed.
This is a leg bone? What is that?
So it's a femur. It's a thigh bone. And we turned it over. The state police turned it over to the state museum, and they determined it was a thigh bone from a juvenile, somebody about 16 or 17.
Wow.
Something like that.
Amazing.
And
I'm not sure they kept it there, and I
asked for it a few number of years later, and they gave it to me. So
I don't think we've ever had just a random thigh bone in the studio here.
You still have the
not right now. No cameras right
no
now.
No camera. Okay. Well, I'll hold it up anyways.
Yeah, just so Zach, the engineer, can be nauseated. Yeah, that's great. There's the bone, Zach. Yeah, nice. Andrea Leong likes it as well. Okay. Well,
so that's that.
You don't see that every day. The number here is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy's our guest today. You sent me a couple of videos, and I couldn't get one on the page. It just wouldn't embed for some reason. The one that I embedded, let's just talk about it briefly. And this is insulating an old brick wall. And I thought it was a great video. Tell us just this. By the way, if you want to check it out, you can go to WAMC.org and look at today's webpage for the show. But, Darren, explain it a little bit.
So this project was on an old historical building, and often they are challenged to insulate, particularly if it's a brick building and you're trying to save the exterior. The best way to insulate an old building is on the exterior. It's like putting a jacket on.
Yeah.
But if you have, you know, historic fabric that you're trying to save, like nice-looking brick building, that doesn't work. So this was on the building that was condemned in the city of Glens Falls.
The little building?
It's called Dr. Ferguson's office.
It's a small building,
right? It's a small, very diminutive building, second empire, 1870s, very cute, dollhouse-like. It was condemned. The roof was falling in. We bought it from the city of Glens Falls for a dollar.
Really?
They had solicited bids to have it demolished, and they ranged from $80,000 to $150,000, something
right.
like that. So, which sounds like a really great deal for us, is a good deal for them, too.
Yep.
So anyways, we totally gutted it, still retaining as much of the historic features as possible, and we needed a way to insulate it. So came up with this idea to reframe the walls on the inside. It was lath and plaster directly on the brick, so very poor insulating wall cavity. So we pulled off the lath and plaster, and we framed up a conventional 2x4 wall, straightened the walls while doing that because they were bowed out some. And then we cut pieces of rigid insulation to fit in between the studs, 2-inch polyisocyanurate. Cut it just the right size, and before we inserted that panel, we spray foamed the backside of the 2x4s to the brick wall. There was a slight gap there for a couple of reasons. One, the wall wasn't straight, and two, we wanted a gap there for moisture to be, you know, an airspace there in case there's any moisture that gets in from the brick. It would have some ability to not immediately condense.
Yeah.
So we put the panel in between the two studs, and we spray foamed out of a can the total perimeter and sandwiched it in, and it was a tight fit.
Right.
And so the video explains that, and you know, it's a pretty good procedure for insulating an old home. Could be used on a home that wasn't brick as well, where you wanted to save the exterior siding, but you wanted to add insulation on the inside.
Yeah.
Gives you a chance to rework the electrical wire as well.
Yeah.
So it's pretty good video.
Now, the short video we couldn't get on, but you said this was an important one.
Yeah, it's important and it's simple, and I like that. It was a 28-second video, and it's me in the kitchen taking a plate and wiping the salad dressing off the plate with a paper towel. And suggesting anything that's greasy on your plate, pork chop grease or
bacon
butter,
grease, yeah.
bacon, anything.
Right.
Anything that has any type of oil, wipe it off your plate, throw the paper towel away, then do your dishes. And if you have a residential wastewater treatment system, it'll increase your lifespan 2 or 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, so that's great.
Save you. And those are expensive to replace. They can be anywhere from $10,000 to $30,000 to replace. Same thing in the city. It's not as important in the city because you don't have a leach field in your backyard, but you do have the pipes and they do clog up. You keep putting grease down there, they will clog up, and they'll always clog up at the most inopportune time. So, you know,
yes.
A simple little thing that you can do can save you a lot of money.
Yeah. You know, and we had some backups at our shower recently, and you know, we didn't even think about this on a regular basis, but the plumber he said, you know what? Every once in a while, throw some hot water down there, and it helps. It clears stuff out.
It does.
So that's all right.
But, you know, in a residential wastewater system, that'll help for the first few feet. But once it gets out to the ground, it's
right.
going to recoagulate and cause a problem.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Darren Tracy, we have about 3 minutes before the break. So let's set up this name that tool, and I have no idea what this one is. All right, this is It's a big old clunker, man. This looks like it goes back to the 30s. This looks up. It says, wear safety goggles. Okay, fair enough.
You can read the backside of that, too, because it's made in the USA.
It's a crescent. Should I say the number, or will that give it away?
I wouldn't say the number. Okay. You said the manufacturer. That might be enough. We can give the number.
It's made in USA. It's heavy. It's what, wrought iron? What is this?
I would say that's cast, with the exception of the end, which would be a forged steel.
Okay. So it is a long handle that is telescoping and pretty heavy. And then at the end, it's got a handle with a pair of, I don't know, pincers of some kind. I don't even know
That's a good description without giving it away.
Okay. And the number here is 800-348-2551. We'll take your guesses, and we'll see what happens as we play Name That Tool with Darren Tracy, and then we'll get to your calls on the other side of the break as well. 800-348-2551, WAMC.org is our website. You can check out Darren's video there. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you. It's Home Maintenance, Repair, and Improvement with Darren Tracy, and we're playing Name That Tool and also taking your regular old home improvement calls. Now, via the email at voxpop@wamc.org, our first guess was correct. Joseph, you got it right, but I'm not going to say what it is. We'll see who calls in with the correct answer first. All right, Darren?
That sounds good. Did Joseph say where he's from?
Doesn't say, but he nailed it. Okay, so the number here is 800-348-2551. Allison is in Woodstock. Hello, Allison, you're on.
Hi. I live in an 1875 old farmhouse, which has been renovated, whatever, along the years. But, boy, in a cold winter, it is the draftiest place I've ever lived. And I don't know who to call. I mean, some of it's obvious around windows, but, you know, you open a cabinet door in the kitchen and there's clearly nothing between the outside of the wall and my garbage can. It's just cold everywhere. Who do I call? What kind of, you know, company do I call? And can I do it in the winter?
Okay, Allison, there are a couple of approaches on that. Long-term fix, you can check out the video to which Ray referred regarding insulating your wall in the future. That's not going to help you short-term right now. Short-term right now, there are a few tricks. Any exterior doors you have, you can take a bath towel, roll it up into a cylinder, and put it down at the bottom to act as a sweep, a blockage. Another relatively easy thing to do is if you can get into your basement, have access, there's a building member called a band joist or rim joist around the perimeter where the wood portion of your house rests on top of your foundation wall. That's notoriously a leaky area. That's something that you could insulate with, say, Roxul mineral insulation. You cut that up into pieces and jam it into any cavities there. There are other ways to insulate that as well. I think I have a video on that. You can check out my Darren Tracy YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and type in my name, Darren Tracy Engineer.
Or you can catch the link right off the page for today's program or any one of the programs he's been on here.
Other than a general, you know, handyman, are there kinds of companies that can do this? I'm not eager to start cutting up insulation myself and stuff.
That's a good idea. I'm with you there.
Yes, you can contact, if you're in New York State, you can contact NYSERDA. If you're in Massachusetts.
I am in New York.
Woodstock. Okay. Contact NYSERDA. They have all sorts of valuable information on their website, and they have lists of contractors that do those types of home improvements. They also have a free service, an energy audit, where they'll come out and they'll install a blower door in your home. Basically, they'll pressurize your home and find out where the leaky areas are. and make recommendations for you. Again, we're late in the year for that, so it may not help you this year, but for next year, that's the thing to do. I've mentioned that a few times. I mean, really need to grab hold of energy savings when we can. And again, it's inexpensive. Sometimes it's a free initial program. The payback on some of the measures that they will suggest are as short as a year or two. There are grant opportunities. I know in the city of Albany, you can get some of this stuff done for free.
Yeah.
Other areas, you know, take advantage of that low-hanging fruit. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Can I ask one question about if I get that free assessment through NYSERDA, what I can't figure out is, you know, is it some commercial company that's going to come out, do the assessments, and then do it, and I don't have a choice as to what company to use, and they're kind of in it for themselves, or is it a service, and then I take that information and go talk to people?
The latter.
You know what I mean?
The latter. I do not think that you're committed to the company that comes out and does the energy audit. They may provide those energy insulation and air sealing services, but you're not committed to that one certain company.
Allison, thanks for the call. All right, let's take a guess here on Name That Tool. And again, Joe in Nassau got it correct. So let's go to New Paltz and see what Elizabeth has to say. Elizabeth, you have a guess for Name That Tool. Go ahead.
I had two thoughts. One is a thing for grabbing stuff, a telescoping thing for grabbing stuff that you can't reach.
We're going to say no to that. What's your other one?
Okay.
I'll give you two guesses.
A pruning tool?
I'm not going to give you any more hints, but I think we were thinking along the same lines initially. And Elizabeth, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Scott in Half Moon. Scott, you're on. Name that tool, my friend.
I think it's a nail puller.
Just to go back to Elizabeth, I'm not sure that we told her that that's not the tool. That was not the tool.
Scott,
it would be
however,
a stretch to qualify that as a accurate guess.
Okay.
So it's not. But Scott.
Scott nailed it.
Scott nailed it. It's a nail puller. It's a particular type of nail puller. In fact, this was my father's tool, and it was one of the first tools that I used to use when I was just helping him do building.
Right.
We'd have 2x4s laying around with nails in them, so my job was to go around and pull the nails out of the 2x4 so we could reuse the 2x4. So it's called a slide hammer nail puller. So the forged steel pincers on the bottom, you get that towards the nail head, and then you pick up this telescoping handle and then drive it down. And that drive down action pinches the forged steel nipper type head around the nail head itself. And then it acts as a lever, and then you can use the telescoping portion of this to pull it back and gain more leverage and pull out the nail head. And what this is handy for is it makes a small mark on the nail remover. Today, most carpenters will just use what's called a cat's paw. They carry that around their pouch, and it's like a forked device.
Yeah.
And you hit the opposite end of it with your hammer, and it drives underneath the nail. Works very well. It's effective, but it will tend to mar up the wood surface. So this crescent sliding nail puller is advantageous in that it minimal mark.
Well, Scott, congratulations. You've won exactly nothing for your knowledge, but we're very proud of you.
All right, you still there?
Yeah. Hello.
All right, I want to just to let you know I have one, and I bought two of them from auctions for my two son-in-laws.
Aha. This is Crescent brand,
great
right?
Tool.
Made in the USA.
Made in the USA. It's a number 56. And Scott, 56. Thanks for the call. How old do you think that one is, Darren?
Well, let me do the math on my age. It's got to be, that's probably 50, 60 years
was
old.
Was it handed down to him?
That was my dad's. And
you think?
No, I don't know how old
it
is. Probably the turn of the last century is when
it looks old, man.
When it was invented.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Bina's in Fishkill. You're on. Hello?
Hello?
You're on. Go ahead.
Hi, I had a question. I have some green moss-like substance growing on the side of a roof. It is, of course, on the side that there's no sun. So how do I get rid of that moss? And is there any other underlying problem as a result of that on the rooftop?
Bina, I will tell you what I do, and that is to take a broom on top of the roof, but be careful climbing up there, and just lightly broom the moss off. And you don't want to be too aggressive to remove any of the granules from the shingles, but that's what I do. I think that there are liquid compounds that you can apply to that as well, but I'm not an expert on that, and there's probably a downside to that with the environment. But I just use a broom and keep it down. That helps out.
Okay, I will try that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Be safe, and thank you for the call. Let's go to Bill in Wayweyanda. Bill, you're on with Darren Tracy.
Yeah, hi. You hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, about 30 years ago, this ice and dam product came on to help stop the ice from backing up and coming into your house. The problem with it is, I'm going to let you know, I've been a home improvement guy for over 50 years.
Okay.
When
I better
you go
be
to
on
re-roof,
my game.
Yeah, you got
to
be
when you
on
go
your
to re-roof a house,
right?
This stuff does not come off,
aha.
Period. The shingles glue themselves to that material, and that does not come off.
Oh, boy.
And I was wondering if you bumped into this. I went on the Internet, and they have a big thing about it. This stuff doesn't come off.
Huh.
Period.
Well, Darren, do you know this stuff?
You're not describing ice and water shield, are you?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it has a tenacious bond.
Yeah. It doesn't come off. What they say to do is take off the plywood.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the state makes you put this stuff on.
Yeah. Have you used a roofing shovel, a shovel that's square?
There's nothing.
Nothing that takes it off.
I have the shovel. I have every tool there is.
Wow. Yeah. The state makes you put it on, did you say?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a building
yep.
code.
Huh.
Yep.
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 Well, and the problem is if you start pulling some nails, you've got holes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I would say, Bill, what's the problem if you get off what shingles you can and just go over top of that if you're doing a re-roof? What's the harm there?
Well, to me, it's a bad product. If you can't take it off and your shingles are stuck to it, you got nothing but bad news.
All right,
you have a point there.
They also say. You have to put the same manufacturer, if you're going to try and go over this, you have to know the same manufacturer, because unlike manufacturers, don't seem to work. So what I did was, one shingle lays over another, right?
Correct.
I just snapped that off.
Yeah.
And because of the architectural shingles, you can go right over it. No one ever sees it. But what I'm getting at is this is a bad product.
Okay. Well, you've said that.
Well, yes, in terms of being able to remove it, it is effective at stopping or helping prevent water leaks at those roof overhang areas that are prone to leaking and prone to ice dams.
Yeah.
Tangent a little bit, the most effective way to handle the ice dam problem is to insulate your attic well and air seal it well and have appropriate attic ventilation. As you most probably know, Bill, being in the trades that long, being in the industry that long.
Yeah. Well, Bill, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Darren Tracy's our guest. We'll go to Jeff in Westfield. Jeff, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Howdy.
I have a question. We have a family room that is separate from the main house, and it has a boiler system, baseboard boiler, that's probably over 30-plus years old. This past summer, we installed a heat pump. So now we have air conditioning and heat in this room. However, the boiler system is still installed. The pipes go down through an uninsulated crawl space. And I am wondering, is that something that I could possibly remove by draining the water out and getting rid of the boiler itself? Or can I just go down and maybe remove the water from the pipe so they don't burst? I have shut the power off, the gas off, and the water off to the unit, so it's not working at all. I just don't know exactly the best way to remove the item.
Okay. You could do option one or option two, as you suggested, but I wouldn't. And I wouldn't because you might need that extra heat on some of these cold winter days, and we're having a cold winter day upcoming here
in a
couple of days. As long as the system is functioning, I would keep that. But what you would want to do is add antifreeze to the liquid in those pipes so that they don't freeze. You wouldn't want to have that system sitting there with water in and not use it and just use your mini split because it will split. The pipes will freeze
right.
And split and cause a problem.
I mean, we do have a wood stove that we use that's in that room as kind of a secondary heat source. I'm just afraid. I mean, the reason we shut it off was because there was a leak coming out of some of the piping in the boiler room where it's located.
Okay.
And I had a company come in, and they're like, oh, you should replace this and replace that.
Yeah.
And it was going to be like $6,000 or something.
Right.
So,
yeah.
We went with the heat pump instead.
Right. Well, I would drain the pipes regardless, and you could choose to fill them back up with an antifreeze solution or not, but drain them regardless. I know that I had this problem. We use a wood stove in our house quite a bit.
Right.
We have hot water baseboard heating, and we have a loop that goes up to a space above our garage that I use as an office. And that particular loop was not filled with antifreeze. It was filled with water, and it froze and created a leak because we weren't using that portion of the heating system. We just let it sit there during a really cold night, and that can create a problem.
Oh, that scares me. Talk about burst pipes and frozen pipes scares me to death.
Yeah, yeah, and I want to speak to that. Can I have a second?
Sure, you got a couple minutes, yeah.
When we have these single-digit or below-digit nights, and if you have an old house, and I know they're allowed to hold houses in this listening audience is the greater Northeast old housing stock. You want to open up your kitchen cabinets, vanity cabinets to let some warm air go in there. And if it's an area that has frozen in the past, you want to slow drip on those cold nights. You know, drip, drip.
How many drip. Faucets? All the faucets?
In the areas that are prone to freezing, if you have an interior faucets on an interior wall, no. But if you have an exterior wall faucet in an old farmhouse and you've had freeze-ups before, that's what I do. It's just a cheap insurance policy, single digits or below. That's what I do.
Okay.
You know, drip, drip, drip. Space heaters, if you are using a space heater, do not use an extension cord. They're not designed for that. It can be a fire hazard. If you're using a heat lamp to keep your pipes warm, you want to be very careful about that. Our neighbor's home burned down 3-4 years ago. Newer home, they had a heat lamp that they were using actually to keep ducks warm.
Yeah.
And it fell down, melted the plastic pool that the ducks were in. Caught on fire.
Ouch.
Burnt the house down.
Yeah.
Massive fire.
Everybody okay?
So everybody was okay. I'm not sure about the ducks, but those things can happen. Smoke alarms. Make sure your smoke alarms are active. You have new batteries. The smoke alarms made these days have sealed batteries so that you can't replace them because often they won't get replaced, and that's a fire hazard.
Why is it every time you're on, I'm terrified and I see dollar signs flying in the air?
Well, that's relatively inexpensive.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
But there are many things that can go wrong that are very expensive.
Yeah, that's the problem with being a homeowner. It's it's a lot of work.
It ain't all it's cracked up to be, frankly. Let's go to Charles in Pleasant Valley. Charles, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, go ahead. Darren, I've got a modular house that was built in 2000. Poured foundation. I have the two-car garage underneath the whole house. It's really just a holding cell right now for all the stuff that we can't fit normally in the rest of the house. But eventually we'd like to make it, you know, a living space, you know, send all the teenagers down there to romp around, whatever. The two garage doors, you know, they're about 12 inches deep, you know, that from the outside. I want to put sliding glass doors on them. Is that something that can you put a sliding glass door right down onto the concrete, or do you have to have a pressure treated 2x4 underneath it? You know, obviously a drip, a sill underneath it to prevent the water from coming in. But, you know, I just want to see if I can just put the sliding glass door right down onto and attach it right to the side of the concrete.
I don't see any reason why you couldn't do that. You would want to put some sort of a sill sealer or foam or something to take up any gaps between the concrete and the threshold of the patio door. If you put down a wood plate, it could be a trip hazard. So, no, I don't see any reason why you couldn't do that.
All right, let's take a break. Charles, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. It's home maintenance and repair with our buddy Darren Tracy. We'll be back and check the email bag. Hey, if you missed out on Giving Tuesday yesterday, Giving Wednesday at work as well. WAMC.org. If you want to make a pledge, we take your pledges any day of the year. You can make a donation to this radio station. It is community supported all day long, every day, all year. We need you. WAMC.org. Darren Tracy's our guest here on Vox Pop. And Frank writes in, many old-fashioned faucets have the hot and cold water controlled by different knobs. Some sinks even have separate hot and cold faucets. Modern sinks now have a single centralized knob for both the hot and cold water. Are these new faucets any better, or do you prefer the old-school separate faucets? Which ones hold up better over time?
I'm not sure which ones hold up better over time. The old ones are more easily rebuildable with gaskets, two separate faucet sources. What's nice about the new ones that blend into one is that you can moderate the cold and hot to a desired temperature, and it comes out in one stream versus juggling back and forth between a cold individual cold and hot.
All right. This email is from Elizabeth. What's the best way to attach a battery to my natural gas furnace using a transfer switch for during power outages? What connecting wire goes from the battery to the transfer switch? I know that a licensed electrician needs to install the transfer switch, but I want to know who to contact.
Okay.
You know, I've always thought
I won't have you read that again, but I just wanted to suggest that you want to be careful about that because the battery is a 12-volt direct current, and I think she's trying to power some sort of heat source, which...
to stay warm during a power outage.
That's probably sourced by 115-volt alternating current. So you want to check into that.
Well, she's going to call an electrician anyway.
Okay.
But, I mean, here's the thing. I agree. You know, you have, let's say you have natural gas.
Yeah.
We have on demand.
Yeah.
And then there's a power outage. You can't run it. What's the point?
Well, that's why you have that fireplace you have as a backup. And, you know, if you put a wood insert in there, it'd heat you even better.
Well, you're not answering my question.
Yeah. Well,
and you're not answering Elizabeth's question.
Well, I'll tell you what. On a related subject, you could say that problem occurs in a sump pump situation. You'll have a big rainstorm and flood, and when you need it most, your sump pump is not working. You can install a 12-volt pump system like that you'd use in a boat, a bilge pump, connected at the batteries so that if your power goes off, you still don't get flooded out in the basement. So there are things that you can do, machinations that you can do.
AC is what we're using.
You could come up with something. I would have to get into the details more. But,
okay. All right. I mean, you could get an inverter, right? You could take DC inverter.
Yes.
But either way, Elizabeth, it's probably best to call a professional so you don't blow up or electrocute yourself. All right. Let's see. This is from Cheryl. I have a 114-year-old water tank. It was of very good quality, and I've had no issues until recently. I'm noticing the hot water has a smell of almost burning metal and once a mildew odor. It's only happened a few times, usually after water was not used much for a few days. Is this indicative of an anode rod problem or bacteria growth? The water temperature is spot on, and that's from Cheryl.
Could be both. It could be the anode rod needs replacement. Could be that some bacteria is growing in there. You could try draining it, replacing the anode rod. Make sure you fill the tank back up before you power it back up again. And it's probably 14-year-old, not 114-year-old.
Okay. And the final one for now, and then we'll go back to the phones. I love this. This is from Lisa. Recently, I had a plumber solve a plumbing issue that has vexed my home for 2 years, and he would not charge me despite hours of work. What gift might I send to a truly great human being? I love that, Lisa.
I would say a number 56 crescent slide hammer nail polish.
I don't know, but a pie usually works for me if I do something nice.
Well, that's anything you can eat is always good.
Not only is your plumber a great human being, Lisa, but you are too for even thinking of that.
Yeah. So that's a great story. You know, I love to hear that.
Yeah, it's really cool. And you know what? In my town, we got a great plumber too, and he's awesome. Joanna in South Hadley, Massachusetts, you're on.
Hi there. Just a follow-up to the rim joist thing about putting insulation in those kind of wooden boxes on top of the foundation wall. I really appreciate what was just said on the show about people being able to do that. I had MassSave, which is the equivalent of the NYSERDA, come and they took a quick walkthrough. They did a level two, which is send an engineer from an engineering company to really go through with a fine-tooth comb. And I'm glad to say I qualified for $4,000 worth of free insulation.
Wow. Fantastic.
And I really encourage people to do this process. It took about 2 months before they finally got here and did it, but I just walked out to my driveway, and for the first time in 26 years, I have snow that has not melted on my roof or my dormers. Yep, it's completely unmelted snow, so I know it did a huge amount. Now, one little coda of a question here. In terms of putting the insulation into the rim joists, those little kind of places where the,
cavities.
A floor is supported with the right cavities. Number one, when MassSave vendor came, they used a fire block foam, and they said they had to go into those wooden cavities and seal every seam to comply with the current fire codes, and to keep if there was a problem fire in the basement, it wouldn't go up the old walls. And so, does a do-it-yourselfer, should they also, I know there are products, fireblock foams that, individuals can buy, should they do that part of it first as they did with mine, and then they put in fiberglass insulation without any facing on it? It was just handfuls of fiberglass insulation. So any suggestions about that for do-it-yourselfers?
Yes, if you have what's called balloon framing, where the framing travels from maybe even the basement all the way up to the first and second floor where fire could travel, you would definitely want fireproofing spray foam. And if there was any question, you can just use that. It's a formulation, and it's just like the great stuff, except it's formulated as a fireproofing. It's a great story, and it ties into the ice and water shield. If you don't have snow melting on your roof, you don't have that ice and water shield problem. So the building is a living organism, and one thing affects another thing. And let's use our building science, use our energy efficiency, and we'll be in less wars because of that.
Joanna, thanks for the call. Darren Tracy's our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Well, this is odd. Usually Jim from Matamoros only calls during Medical Monday, and yet here he is. Hello, Jim.
Right. I got a drain from you know where, and I can't get it to stop leaking. I've replaced it was half metal and half plastic, so I replaced the metal, which was pretty well shot. But on the 16-incher that goes from the one sink that I don't use to the other sink, right where it makes the connection with the downspout, it just keeps leaking there. I've put the plumber's dope in there first. Surrounded it with an auto body. And,
okay, I think I get the picture.
Flex stuff.
All right.
Is this a kitchen sink? Jim, kitchen sink?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's a problem that happens with lots of sinks. It happens with my sink. You get stuff crammed underneath the sink. You open it up and you push some more in there, and it moves the fittings a little bit. And typically there's a nylon nut that O-ring that tightens up against a fitting with a nut, and they loosen up.
Yeah, replace all them.
Yeah, I would start all fresh. Go buy new P-trap kit that suits your particular situation. They come in different formulations. I would just start new, because one little nick in one of those nylon rings can cause you problems. And another thing that I would do is I would put what I do in our home is put a cake tin underneath there. With a couple, it comes up an inch or so. So if you do bang the piping and it starts leaking, it gives you a chance to discover the leak before all the wood gets wet and the bottom of your base cabinet collapses. So, that's what we do.
Or you can just leave the pan in there for several years, which is what we did, and then you empty it out, and it's fine. Tom is in Niskayuna. Tom, go ahead.
Hey, fellow.
You know all my tricks.
I have a house that was built in 1945, and I have asbestos wafer siding around the whole house, and we've lived here for about 30 years, and I've always done a good job of, keeping it painted, because I don't want a situation where I'm scraping asbestos board. And I'm wondering, in your professional opinion, if this is something that I can just continue to blissfully ignore for the rest of my life, the fact that I have this type of shingle, or would you recommend that I get it covered with something more updated, or would you recommend that it get ripped off, which sounds hazardous to me? What would you recommend?
If you want to improve the energy efficiency of your walls, if that's an issue, then you may want to remove it or cover it. If you don't, that material is really durable, and to keep it painted, that's what I would do. Just less is more. Keep it painted. Holds paint really well compared to woods. I would just paint it. If you do want to insulate your home, then you could go right over top of that with some 4x8 sheets of polyisocyanurate insulation, and then a siding material. Or you could remove the stuff, but then you get into an asbestos abatement problem. I'm not sure exactly what the rule is on that. Often with asbestos, you're entitled to remove it by yourself as a homeowner and double bag it.
But you can't hire anybody?
If you hire someone, they need to be licensed asbestos abatement contractor.
All right, Tom, thank you very much. Let's go to Brantford, Connecticut, and it's Chris's turn. Chris, you're on with Darren Tracy.
Thank you, guys, and happy holidays.
You too.
My wife and I recently bought an apartment, 50-year-old, would like to update it. It has radiant heat in the ceiling, and we would like to add recessed lighting fixtures. Is it possible, or should we just bag it and stick with conventional lamps?
You look confused.
I've never heard of radiant heat in the ceiling.
Well, is it for the floor
it's
above?
Fantastic.
Really?
It's fantastic.
Okay, you're talking about in the ceiling of the lower level. So your floors have radiant heat.
No, the ceiling.
Okay.
Well, that's weird. Yeah.
It's like in the sheetrock. It's like it's like an electric blanket, I suppose. But I'm 6.5 feet, and I can put my hands on it. It's warm. It's like, wow.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's an application I've never seen, because typically that would be in the floor of the space that you wanted to heat, because heat rises.
Right.
Getting back to your question, what to do with lights?
Chris, I think you stumped the band here. I honestly think this is the first time I've ever seen this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's Doc Severinsen when you need him?
Yeah, yeah. So you had a question about the lighting. I spent up my mental.
Yeah, we wanted to put in recessed lighting. And, you don't want to cut into this.
Yeah, okay. Is there a floor above this, or is there an attic space above this?
There is. We have neighbors upstairs.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking it doesn't cover the whole surface of the ceiling, but regardless, I would put a surface mount light in on there versus the recessed. And they have slimline surface mount lights, so you get close to the same effect. So that's what I would suggest.
Wow, Chris, thanks for the call and appreciate it very much. Very quickly, let's go to Andrew in Shelburne Falls, who's been waiting a while. Andrew, go ahead. You got to make it fairly quick.
All right. Thank you for taking my call. I've got a on-demand hot water heater that's propane-fired that's going on the fritz, and I was thinking this might be the opportunity to go electric. My plumber thinks I would need a 65-gallon holding tank to get enough hot water out of an electric on-demand heater, and it does connect with my solar tank, which works for half a year. I'm just wondering if you have any recommendations for going electric, because that 65 gallons doesn't seem like on demand to me.
You're right. That was my comment. I wasn't putting two and two together, because typically those do not need a storage tank. They do need a lot of electricity to be able to heat that water up on demand. Like you might need 240-amp breakers or something like that to power a 16,000-watt on-demand water heater. So something not right there. You typically do not need a storage tank with the on-demand setup. I'll check into that more.
Okay.
All right.
But do you think electric is the way to go?
If you have the electric capacity, I think it's a good way to go. Yeah. If the capacity in your breaker box, it's a good way to go. It's probably less expensive than a propane. How long? Well, I won't keep you because I know we're running out of time. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. All right. Quickly, 30 seconds for this one. Mike in Rexford wants to know, here in the Northeast, just about everybody has a basement. In other parts of the country, houses are built on posts with crawl spaces underneath or on slabs. I've been wondering, what exactly is the purpose of a basement? And that's from Mike in Rexford.
The purpose of that is to have your foundation below the frost line so your house doesn't move up and down throughout the seasons. And if it does move up and down, then it really can get out of whack and cause structural problems.
Tell me about it. All right, Darren Tracy, how do people find West Branch Engineering online?
Google search West Branch Engineering, YouTube channels. I've got some good videos there. I think I have a rim joist video. Google search Darren Tracy Engineer. Have any questions, you can send me an email, darren@westbranchinc.com. I'll answer simple questions for free.
You know what? You're a good guy. Darren Tracy, thanks for being here, and we will see you soon. Have a good holiday.
Thank you.
Support comes from Mountain Laurel Waldorf School, New Paltz, welcoming all to their winter gift-making fair, featuring holiday crafts, puppet shows, and handmade gifts, Sunday, December 7th from 11 to 4, mountainlaurel.org. And Bennington Museum, presenting Vermont Vice Regional Artists Exhibition and Closed Bid Auction, benefiting Bennington Museum and Regional Artists, BenningtonMuseum.org, for dates and more information. Thanks again to Darren Tracy for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, phone screened expertly by Andrea Leong. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's a very rare Thursday edition of Pets and Vets. Carrie O'Loughlin will be here. We'll see you, too.